This is Kathy bringing you the commercial news for Tuesday, July the 15th. Looking at the front page, it says a few balloons over Vermilion. And there are two pictures here, one of several balloons that are just taking off, and then another one of the crew around the basket getting ready for takeoff. And this was written by Kegler White. Wind and rain may have foiled hot air balloon flights for many of the balloons set to fly at the 9th annual Balloons Over Vermilion fundraiser Friday and Saturday, but some still took to the skies. Among those who flew were pilots Stephanie Mon of Wentzville, Missouri, David Boesdorfer of Springfield, Lynn Brownell of St. Louis, Missouri, and Todd Spicer of Danville, Ed DeVore of Covington, Indiana, Donna Carlton-Vish of Danville, and others. As hot air balloons have no steering wheel or brakes, pilots are at the mercy of the wind. It can be unsafe to fly when the wind gusts are faster than 8 to 10 miles per hour, according to meteorologist Kevin Lighty, who was on the site at the event Friday evening. And there's another, looks like a black and white picture of a balloon about half inflated. This next article is Hospitals Fear Cuts Under Domestic Policy Law by Peter Hancock from the Capital News, Illinois. Hospital officials in Illinois say they will have to make some difficult decisions in the next few years that could involve laying off staff, cutting back services, and even closing some facilities entirely. That's the expected result of federal funding cuts built into the recently passed domestic policy bill that President Donald Trump signed into law on July 4th, a law that will cut federal spending on Medicaid by more than $1 trillion over the next 10 years. A.J. Wilhelmy, CEO of the Illinois Health and Hospital Association, said in an interview with Capital News Illinois that the financial pressures will fall heaviest on hospitals that serve rural areas, where a larger share of the population is covered by Medicaid. The hospitals in these communities are already on the brink based on some of the increases in labor, drug, and supply costs coming out of COVID, a continuation of claim denials by payers, and relatively flat reimbursement rates, Wilhelmy said. So all of that is creating significant pressures. And when you add these Medicaid cuts to an already challenging situation, we know that there are several hospitals that will close because of these changes. The new law contains provisions that are expected to reduce the number of people enrolled in Medicaid, particularly in states like Illinois that expanded eligibility for the program under the Affordable Care Act, the 2010 law commonly known as Obamacare. Those include work requirements for people who enrolled through the expansion, as well as requirements that they verify their continued eligibility for the program twice a year instead of annually. But the law also includes changes in aspects of the program that most people outside of the healthcare industry never see. Those mechanisms known as provider taxes and directed payments affect the way states finance their share of the cost of Medicaid and the way they direct additional payments to certain health care providers such as hospitals. Like many states, Illinois levies special taxes on certain health care providers, including hospitals. The money those taxes generate is used to draw down additional matching funds, then is paid back to the providers in the form of directed payments to increase their overall reimbursement rate and to reward them if they meet certain performance or quality standards. Currently, IHA estimates the hospital tax generates about $2 billion a year in revenue. This past session, lawmakers passed a bill to increase the assessment in order to fund a 54% increase in hospital payments, subject to federal approval of the state's plan. But state lawmakers passed that bill before Congress passed Trump's domestic policy bill, dubbed the One Big Beautiful Tax Act. Prior to passage of the new federal law, the tax rate states could levy was effectively capped at 6% of a hospital's net patient revenue. But under the new law for states like Illinois that expanded Medicaid under ACA, that cap will gradually be lowered by half a percentage point each year starting in 2028 until it reaches 3.5% in 2032. In addition, Wilhelmy said, the new law imposes a cap on the directed payments that expansion states like Illinois can send to hospitals, so the total does not exceed the maximum allowed under Medicare. The federal health insurance program for seniors, which has a lower reimbursement rate than Medicaid. And that will result in a significant reduction in Medicaid reimbursements for hospitals, Wilhelmy said. It means literally hundreds of millions of dollars in less reimbursement to hospitals. The $48 billion impact over 10 years. According to the nonpartisan health policy research organization KFF, federal Medicaid spending in Illinois is expected to be reduced by about $48 billion over 10 years under the new legislation. That includes an estimated $6.73 billion in spending cuts in rural parts of the state. Democratic Governor J.B. Pritzker has been harshly critical of the new law, and particularly the Medicaid cuts in it. Donald Trump isn't just cutting health care. He's also closing hospitals in Illinois and across the country with his latest scheme, Pritzker said in one social media post, while the bill was moving through Congress. Hard-working Illinoisans will spend more time in overcrowded waiting rooms and lose access to life-saving care. Wilhelmy, meanwhile, said there is still time before the cuts begin to take effect, and he is urging state officials to begin work immediately to develop strategies to adapt to the changes. I think the state will need to work with stakeholders like IHA and our hospitals, other provider groups, to identify creative options to ensure that the Medicaid program can continue to be that lifeline for vulnerable patients and communities, he said. And that will include identifying options to fortify those programs and services, as well as identify working with our congressional delegation on ways to mitigate or further delay these changes. And this headline on the front page, Reading Trail kicks off today. Kids and families are invited to read and collect stamps for prizes, by Kegla White. Starting today, kids all across the area are invited to take part in a Danville Community Reading Trail. For the next 5 weeks, kids will have the chance to stop at several trail stops across town where a children's book will be waiting for them to read. The Reading Trail, hosted by Paper Pie, is a free summer program that provides a fun, family-friendly activity centered around books, according to Brittany Hinton, a local brand partner for Paper Pie. The main purpose of this Danville Reading Trail is to highlight the joys of reading together as a community, Hinton said in a post in the Danville Reading Trail Facebook group. At the end of the summer, kids who visited, read, and had their map stamped at all stops along the trail will receive a small reward, and their name will also be placed in a grand prize drawing, which will include a book shopping spree and other fun swag. Some stops along the trail will also hand out their own goodies to readers. 11 different local businesses have signed up to sponsor a stop on the Reading Trail. The Vermilion County Museum, Mad Goat Coffee South, Dairy Queen on Main Street, the Boys and Girls Club, Revel Bakery and Play Cafe, Danville Area Community College's Reader Route, Women's Care Clinic, Culver's, Two Roads Wellness Clinic, Envirox, and the Danville Family YMCA. For more information or to sign up for the trail, check out bit.ly/Danville Reading Trail. Be sure to join the Danville Community Reading Trail group on Facebook for maps and updates. This headline, Earthrise Energy donates $20,000 to District 118. Rise grant given to help support enhanced educational opportunities. Thanks to Earthrise Energy, students attending Danville District 118 schools will have access to enhanced educational opportunities this fall when they return to school. The Danville Public School Foundation received a $20,000 Rise grant from Earthrise Energy. The donation was made in support of the Foundation's mission of providing enhanced educational opportunities for the students attending Danville Public Schools, according to the press release. According to the DPSF, the donation, along with those of the Foundation's other donors, would allow for continued fulfillment of the classroom endowment requests from teachers to enhance the current curriculum, bring in speakers for school-wide assemblies, and partner with Danville District 118 on larger educational projects. Earthrise Energy's Rise grants are a way for the company to invest in and partner with local nonprofit organizations that serve the populations where we have operations. The purpose of the grant is to establish long-lasting impact and improve the lives of local residents, according to the Earthrise website. RISE grants are specifically awarded to organizations that support excellence in education, protect the environment, and serve local communities. The check was presented by Earthrise Energy to the Danville Public School Foundation on July 8th of this year. And on the next page, the community briefs. SWCD meeting scheduled for today. The regular board meeting of the Vermilion County SWCD will be held today, July 15th. It was held at 8:30. Taps on Tuesday. This week's Taps on Tuesday will be held at 6 p.m. at the Spring Hill Cemetery Soldier Circle. Each attendee will be asked to mention a veteran to be honored that evening. The program will be conducted by Larry Weatherford, Tara Otter, Greg Green, and J.C. Switzer. Taps will be sounded by Anita Zoller. Taps on Tuesday is presented by the Vermilion County War Museum and the Ward Hill Layman Civil War Roundtable. For information, contact Larry Weatherford at 217-474-7256. Farmland Assessment Meeting planned. In accordance with the Illinois Property Tax Code 35 Illinois CS, a public hearing on the certified farmland values for 2025 will be held on July 17th at 8:30 a.m. in room 320 at the Board of which is called the Board of Review Room of the Joseph G. Cannon Building at 201 North Vermilion Street. At the conclusion of the public hearing and after a short break, the Vermilion County Farmland Assessment Review Committee will have its mandated annual meeting in the same location at 8:45 a.m. VFW Fish Fry set for July 18th. The VFW Post No. 2395 Auxiliary announces its third Friday Fish Fry will be held on July 18th at the Post located at 1212 Liberty Street in Covington, Indiana. Serving time is from 5 to 7 p.m. Eastern Time. The menu includes fish fries, baked beans, and coleslaw. Cost is $15 for the public and $12 for veterans, and all dinners are dine-in or carry-out. Monies are used to support community projects and operating costs of the Post. Wonder Junction VBS planned. Danville First Nazarene Church will have its annual Vacation Bible School from Sunday, July 20th through Thursday, July 24th at the church at 2214 North Vermilion Street. The fun begins each evening at 5:30 p.m. and goes until 8. Children will take a journey through the Old West as they learn about who Jesus is, marvel at his birth, his childhood, his ministry, his death and resurrection, and his coming return. The fun includes arts and crafts, singing, recreation, snack, and more. To register, visit https://dfcnaz.church/center.com/registrations/events/288-0749. Science in the City Friday. Staff report. As the back-to-school season approaches, Science in the City is the perfect way to spark excitement in local students and families about learning. The community is invited to Danville's Temple Plaza Friday, August 1st, from 5 to 8 p.m. for a spectacular science fair-style evening filled with hands-on experiments, exciting demonstrations, and interactive exhibits that show science is truly everywhere, from rocks and weather to chemistry and physics of an egg drop, with a competition starting at 5:30 p.m. Contestants can sign up at, https://www.signupgenius.com/go/10COF44ACA F2DA3FEC435-750-537-8-eggdrop#. Wow. Local businesses and organizations will be leading fun, engaging activities that make science come alive right on the streets of downtown. Plus, enjoy live music, great food, and plenty of energy to keep the whole family entertained. For more information regarding Science in the City, visit https://www.firstfridaysdanville.com. Ideas for the 2026 First Fridays are wanted. The City of Danville's Community Relations Team is beginning to plan for the 2026 First Fridays event series and needs the community's input. Those can be submitted at https://pollev.com. And I see two obituaries in the paper today. This first one: Maxine Ann Harmon, age 86, died peacefully at Bickford Assisted Living and Memory Care in Crystal Lake, Illinois, on July 12, 2025. A celebration of life will be held at 10 a.m. on Saturday, July 19, 2025, at Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center at 3940 North Vermilion Street in Danville. Pastor Paul Rebert will officiate. Entombment will be in Sunset Memorial Park in Danville. Visitation will be held on Friday, July 18th, from 5 to 7 p.m. at the funeral home. And this next one, Charles Roy Gates. Charles Roy Gates, 93, passed away peacefully at his home Saturday, July 12th, in Danville, Illinois. A chapel mausoleum Camilla service will be held at 2 p.m. on Friday, July 18th, at the Sunset Memorial Park Chapel Mausoleum in Danville, Illinois, 3901 North Vermilion Street. Robbie Kitcherside will officiate. Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center in Danville, Illinois, is assisting the family with arrangements. Memorials can be made in memory of Charles Gates to a charity of the donor's choice. And back to some news. This says, Pritzker signs order on tariffs by Ben Zielinski. Governor J.B. Pritzker signed an executive order Monday requiring Illinois agencies to draft recommendations to respond to tariffs being implemented by President Donald Trump. The order requires seven state agencies to consider the specific impacts that the U.S. tariffs had on Illinois and provide draft recommendations of measures to mitigate the impact of these tariffs within the next 100 days, which would be October the 22nd. Pritzker said in a statement that tariffs amount to tax increase on consumers and contribute to economic uncertainty. This executive order ensures that we have a clear-eyed view of the impact that the Trump slump will cause from higher prices at the grocery store to uncertainty in our farms and factories, Pritzker said. We're working with other states to stand up for working people and protect our economies when we can. The order cites large tariffs. Trump has unilaterally implemented on most countries, including some of Illinois' largest trading partners, saying the tariffs have raised prices for consumers and businesses and led to supply chain disruptions. The order says tariffs, as well as retaliatory tariffs countries have imposed on the United States, are hurting vital sectors of the Illinois economy. After previously pushing off implementation of some tariffs until August 1st to allow time for negotiations, Trump announced last week that many countries will see tariffs take effect. His latest policy includes 35% tariffs on Canada, 30% on Mexico and the European Union, and between 25% and 40% on Asian countries. The president previously imposed 145% tariffs on goods from China in the spring, but many of his latest rates are lower than they would have been earlier this year. Illinois imports more goods from Canada than any other country. Under Pritzker's executive order, state agencies must examine the impact of tariffs on certain sectors of the economy or the agency's operations. The Departments of Commerce and Economic Opportunity and Employment Security will evaluate challenges reported by businesses, employment trends since tariffs have been implemented, and industries most affected by tariffs. The Department of Human Services will evaluate trends in food donations and supply chain challenges for food assistance programs, as well as the purchasing power of food banks and their ability to meet demand. And in national news, court allows Trump to fire employees by Mark Sherman. The Supreme Court is allowing President Donald Trump to put his plan to dismantle the Education Department back on track and to go through with laying off nearly 1,400 employees. With the three liberal justices in dissent, the court on Monday paused an order from the U.S. District Judge Myung Yuen in Boston, who issued a preliminary injunction reversing the layoffs and calling into question the broader plan. The layoffs will likely cripple the department, Yuen wrote. A federal appeals court refused to put the order on hold while the administration appealed. The high court action enables the administration to resume work on winding down the department, one of Trump's biggest campaign promises. The court did not explain its decision in favor of Trump, as is customary in emergency appeals, but in dissent, Justice Sonia Sotomayor complained that her colleagues were enabling legally questionable action on the part of the administration. When the executive publicly announces its intent to break the law and then it executes on that promise, it is the judiciary's duty to check that lawlessness, not expedite it, Sotomayor wrote for herself and Justices Ketanji Brown and Jackson and Elena Kagan. The Secretary of Education lauds the decision. Education Secretary Linda McMahon said it's a shame it took the Supreme Court's intervention to let Trump's plan move ahead. Today, the Supreme Court again confirmed the obvious. The President of the United States, as head of the executive branch, has the ultimate authority to make decisions about staffing levels, administrative organization, and day-to-day operations of federal agencies, McMahon said in a statement. A lawyer for the Massachusetts Cities and Education Groups that sued over the plan said the lawsuit will continue, adding, "No court has yet ruled on what the administration wants to do is legal." Without explaining to the American people its reasoning, a majority of justices on the U.S. Supreme Court have dealt a devastating blow to this nation's promise of public education for all children. On its shadow docket, the court has yet again ruled to overturn the decision of two lower courts without argument, Sky Perryman, president and CEO of Democracy Forward, said in a statement. The Supreme Court has handed Trump one victory after another in his effort to remake the federal government after lower courts have found the administration's actions probably violate federal law. Included on the opinion page is a cartoon of a heavyset elephant made to sort of look like Trump, and it reads, GOP mic drop on Indiana public broadcast stations. That goes for this station also, which means this service that you are now listening to is in danger of being terminated. And now a little bit of local sports news. Post 210 loses to host Crawfordsville by Marvin Holman. Crawfordsville, Indiana. The Danville Post 210 Speakers baseball team wrapped up play in the Crawfordsville tournament on Saturday with a 2-0 loss to Byron Cox Post 72. Easton Barney, Cole Miller, and Charles Cambridge each had a hit for the Speakers, while Caden Kelminiak had 5 strikeouts and only gave up 5 hits. The Speakers are 16-12-1 and will travel to Watseka today. And under college football, Illini single games tickets on sale next week. Single game tickets for the 2025 Fighting Illini football season will go on sale to iFund members on Monday, July 21st, and to the general public on Thursday, July 24th at noon. The University of Illinois Division of Intercollegiate Athletics announced on Monday. Excitement is building for the Fighting Illini, which will host 7 games at Memorial Stadium in 2025. The team returns 18 starters from last year's Citrus Bowl team that finished number 16 in the final AP Top 25. Fans can purchase tickets at fightingillini.com/tickets. Limited single game tickets remain as Illinois sold out of season tickets for the first time in at least 20 years. Single game pricing is subject to increase with demand. iFund members will enjoy an exclusive presale beginning where they will have first access to the best single game seats. Any fans wishing to become an iFund donor to take advantage of football and men's basketball ticket presales, the best seating locations, special donor events, and more, can make a gift online at jointheifund.com. Giving levels that include these benefits begin at $100. The iFund presale schedule is below. Monday, July 21st at 9 Central Time, Hall of Fame, Loyalty Circle Gold, Loyalty Circle Silver. Tuesday, July 22nd at 9 Central Time, Loyalty Circle Bronze, Block I, Olympian. Wednesday, July 23rd at 9, CT, OSCE, Champion. Wednesday, July 23rd at 12 p.m., All-American Captains and New Illini. Thursday, July 24th at 12 p.m., CT, General Public. A limited number of Colonnades Club season tickets are still available at $1,999. All suites and 77 club tickets are sold out. Student season tickets remain on sale. Students are encouraged to secure their season tickets today as Illinois anticipates to sell out of student season tickets for the second consecutive season in 2025. Development is still the goal for the Dans by Chad Dare. Extended losing streaks are not typical for the Danville Dans under the direction of Eric Coleman. As a matter of fact, Coleman has never had a losing season in 10 previous campaigns with the Dans. But after 3 straight losses this weekend, a 7-4 setback on Friday night at home to Illinois Valley, followed by 12-6 and 9-4 defeats at Chillicothe on Saturday and Sunday respectively, Danville is 12-24 this summer in the Prospect League with just 20 games remaining. "We are going to develop and get better until the final day of the season," Coleman said after Friday's loss. "You never know what could happen in these final weeks. But as long as we are here and we are coaching, my staff and I are going to get them better each and every time they step onto the field, and hopefully that it helps them when they get back to their schools. Development has always been the first priority for Coleman, who saw two former players taken in the 2025 MLB draft on Monday. Cade Snell, a member of the 2021 Danville Dans, was selected by the Chicago Cubs in the fifth round with pick 151. Snell, who was a pitcher when he played for the Dans, has converted to outfielder. The left-handed swinging Snell hit a pitch hit to run homer on August 3, 2021, in the Dans' home finale. It was his first homer since his junior year of high school in 2019. "When I hit it, I didn't think it was going over," Snell admitted back in 2021. That's what I didn't do anything fancy out of the batter's box. And there are several pictures in here. It looks like Danville Dan's first baseman, Jorge Terry Santana, stretches to field a throw from shortstop Tanner McMurray, recording the out in Illinois Valley outfielder Lucas Smith in the fifth inning of Friday's game at Danville Stadium. The Pistol Shrimp scored five unanswered runs in their final four at-bats to beat the Dans. And there's a picture of him running for home. "Once I realized that it went over the wall, it was just an unreal feeling." The other former player selected on Monday was Paxton Kling, a member of the 2022 Danville Dans. Kling, an outfielder, was selected by the Texas Rangers in the seventh round with pick 205. "While we are winning like we thought we would do this summer, there is still an opportunity for these guys to improve, so that when they get back to their schools, they can make an impact," Coleman said. "I will be very happy and proud of my coaches and myself if we see each and every one of these guys being a key contributor at their respective schools. And there are still a handful of players looking for their next program." "That's another part of this game," Coleman said. "We still have some guys that are uncommitted. Hopefully they can find a school in the next month. All of these guys are still grinding and getting better." On Friday night, Danville right-hander Anthony Pesci gave the Dans an excellent opportunity for the victory, holding the Pistol Shrimp to two runs over 5.1 innings while striking out eight. But Illinois Valley scored five runs in the final four innings, including three in the ninth, on run-scoring doubles from James Love, Pambos Nicolaitis, and DeAndre Gaines to break a 4-4 tie. "They brought in some arms that did a good job of keeping us off balance," Coleman said. "We didn't score in the last five innings." The Dans managed just two hits while striking out nine times in the final five innings. Maurice Days Jr. led the offensive tack for Danville with a pair of singles, while Joshua Martin and Jordan Luna had run-scoring singles for the Dans. Slow starts were the problem for Danville in both games at VA Memorial Stadium in Chillicothe. On Saturday night, the Paints scored five times in the bottom of the first off Dan starter Jack Bussard on its way to a 12-6 victory. Jorge Trey Santana II went 2-for-4, with two runs scored and three RBIs to lead the Danville offensive effort. Chillicothe scored nine unanswered runs on Sunday, including six in the first five innings off of Danville starter Nolan Decker, who walked four and struck out three. Martin had an RBI double in the eighth, while Tanner McMurray had a run-scoring single in the ninth for the Dans, who are back at Danville Stadium tonight for a 5:30 p.m. doubleheader against the Alton River Dragons. In this interesting article, "Robot Umps Set to Make Debut" by Ronald Bloom. Tarek Skubal views the strike zone differently than robot umpires. "I have this thing where I think everything is a strike until the umpire calls it a ball," Detroit's AL Cy Young Award winner said ahead of his start for the American League in Tuesday night's All-Star game. MLB has been experimenting with the automated ball strike system in the minor leagues since 2019 and will use it in an All-Star game for the first time this summer. Each team gets two challenges and retains the challenge if it's successful. "Pitchers think everything is a strike. Then you go back and look at it, and it's two or three balls off," Pittsburgh Paul Skaines, starting his second straight All-Star game for the National League. "We should not be the ones that are challenging it." MLB sets the top of the automated strike zone at 53.5% of a batter's height and the bottom at 27%, basing the decision on the midpoint of the plate, 8.5 inches from the front and 8.5 inches from the back. That contrasts with the rulebook zone called by umpires, which says the zone is a cube. Well, this will be interesting to see what happens with it. I hope you enjoyed reading of today's commercial news. This is Kathy wishing you the best for Tuesday, July the 15th.